accession number 20976, Wheel 1.
I was born in Red Hill in Surrey.
Which year was this?
1923.
Did you grow up and have your schooling at Red Hill?
Yes, in Oldswood.
Did your parents both come from Red Hill?
Dad, no. Dad was from Liverpool way, wasn't he? He was a coach builder and he worked at Bolton first before he came to Surrey. And that was before the First War, and married my mother. Whose family came from Crawley, and her father's people come from Charwood and built the Rising Sun at Charwood, but her mother had a very old cottage in Crawley, which she always used to tell me was knocked down to build the first Woolworths, and they've had three in Crawley.
How old were you when you left school?
Me, 14.
So that must have been in 37?
Yes.
Did you get a job?
Yes, I worked a couple of years before I left school. I used to work for a butcher when I was 12 years old and go to Kingston Market with him on push bikes and bring home lambs and tins of liver and goodness what I said.
Is that what you were doing?
Before I went to school.
Is that what you were doing when war was declared?
I worked for the co-op when war was declared, and I was on deliveries, and we had a big delivery service all around Hamworth and around Staines, that area.
How did you feel about the news that war was declared?
We took it very calmly, really. We were only lads, and I remember we hadn't been long in this house, just off the Chertsey bypass, you know, and we started building an air raid shelter for a neighbour of ours at the end of this terrace of small houses that Dad had just bought. He worked at Ryegate, and all the work went from the East Surrey Traction Company, which was the firm at the time, to Chiswick. And all the men were travelling backwards and forwards from Ryegate to Chiswick every day on buses that needed repair. And my brother worked with him. He was a panel beater, and Dad was a supervisor in the heavy structure on the coaches. Of course, when the war started, they started building the Halifax bomber at Chiswick, and Dad went to Mortlake and took all the coach with him, and my brother stayed on the jigs, building the jigs for the Halifax bomber, which they took to Cricklewood and started to build it there. And then I left during that period and joined the army.
I think you were telling me you were in the Home Guard.
Oh, I had about a year in the Home Guard at Twickett, at Witten. Where?
Which battalion of the Home Guard was that?
Was on 2nd Battalion, wasn't it? On the D Company, 2nd Battalion, Middlesex, Home Guard.
What memories have you got of being with the Home Guard?
Oh, we used to go on manoeuvres, and it's not, wasn't so silly at the time, it was quite good. And Sunday mornings and a couple of nights a week, we were always doing something, learning how to fire the spigot mortar and the Canadian rifles that they sent over for us.
Did you think the Germans would invade at that time?
I don't know. I never really took it serious at that age. I expect we thought they would, especially after Dunkirk. Joe's brother was at Dunkirk, wasn't he, Joe? And my aunt and uncle at Red Hill used to tell us how they all came through there and fed them and give them cups of tea and that. And we were in a bit of a mess at the time, weren't we?
Can you tell me about joining the army proper, please?
Yeah, suddenly had the inclination to go to Hounslow, and that's where I joined. And at that time, I didn't think of much about choice, and I went into the machine gun regiment in Middlesex.
Do you know when you joined?
I should know, Joe. My pay book's in the other room.
Well, don't worry.
But no, but it was 41, wasn't it? Late 41, or I think it was late 41.
Don't worry about the date.
And I went to Chester to the Zealand camp on the road to Ellesmere, was it? Ellesmere Port?
Yes.
To the Cheshire Regiment's HQ. There was four machine gun battalions, four machine gun regiments, Manchester Fusiliers, the Cheshires, the Middlesex, and the Northumberland Fusiliers. They were the four machine gun regiments. And we trained there, did our initial training. And then I came back and they put me in the cavalry barracks at Hounslow. And we stopped there until the Welsh Guards moved out of the Beaver Camp opposite, which was a militia camp built by Hall Belisha in the days of the militia, when he was calling the men up at between 20 and 21, I think it was. They all had to do a year. And that's when they built these camps. That was just along the road from the cavalry barracks. And we had a good time there. I was in the they made me a driver mech, it's in there. And I went to Chelsea Barracks and took a course with the British School of Motoring at Walham Green. Used to come out of Chelsea Barracks and go along to, Sloane Square, and catch the train every morning to Walham Green to the British School of Motoring. And there I learnt all about engines. I thought I knew all about them. And then back to Beaver Camp, where we had our carrier platoon. We had three old carriers and an old, very early carrier with no body whatsoever, just two big tall boxes on the side and the engine in the middle. And I think it was more or less for maintenance work. And we stayed there, and it was quite good. That was near home, and we enjoyed it there. Enjoyed my time with the regiment.
How did you get on with the training that they gave you?
All right, yeah. We went to one day we was asked to sign papers, and we went to down through Buckinghamshire, through Hayes, and out through Buckinghamshire to Chequers. We thought it was a pub. It was completely unread. Crosby, the sergeant, he said that it must be a pub, he said. And he was from Staines. And that wasn't far from Buckinghamshire, was it? And we got out there at night, and he said, "We'll bivouac before we go in." And we all got in this little wood and bivouacked in the morning, had a wash and a clean up, and we had all live ammunition. Everything was live. And we made our way to Chequers. And it was Churchill had come home from Greece. He had pneumonia. And instead of taking him to London, and he carried on working at Chequers. And that was what we were there for. And it transpired that he was when he was in the cavalry, or whatever unit he was in, the Dragoons, I think, he was stationed there at the cavalry barracks, and used to, when they finished their training about midday, they'd all get on their horses and gallop up to the palace or wherever he lived in London. And it was quite good. They had a Coldstream Guards with his regiment. And he had a company of Coldstreams and us three carriers. And every other night, we'd go into the library and he'd give us a film show. About half past eight, we'd file into the library on the first floor. And he always had a Mickey Mouse after it. And one day I sat there in the front row next to him, and people would laugh at me when I was telling them this, but funny how you remember it. I sat there in this row, and there was one of his daughters and his wife, and Sir Stafford Cripps and his wife, and a boy next to me. And when this Desert Victory was on, he said, single-seater fighters, jolly good show, Spitfires, single-seater fighters. And every time Rommel come on, there was a little pioneer at the back who said, there's Rommel, there he is, that's Rommel, which upset him. And anyway, when it was all over, and they bought a tray in for him, and I think it was whiskey he drank, didn't he? It might have been brandy, I don't know. But he never drank the cigar, he never smoked the cigar, he held it in his hand, but I never saw him smoke it. But the whiskey, he had a good guzzle of that. And he said at the end, well, he said, we've got a surprise for you tonight. He said, we've got General Montgomery's young son. And he got him to stand up, and he was sitting next to me. And he said, and we ought to give him a big clap for what his father's done. Because Alamein was on it at the time. And that was the end of that. And I thought that was quite good to have been there.
Did he speak to you directly?
No. No, he wished us all good night. Went back to work. He said, I'm going back to work now. And he used to work all night, apparently, with his secretary. And they told me, he was telling me quite a few stories. One about he wouldn't get in. They only had one armoured car he could get in, apparently, and it was from the First War. Spoke wheels it had, and he wouldn't get in it. So he used to follow him along in the Rolls. Or bent, I don't know whether, I think it must have been a Rolls. Anyway, the armoured car would shoot off, and they hadn't got room for Sarah's baby's pram. And they tied it on the top of the armoured car. And off they went down to Buckinghamshire, and it broke down just outside of Hayes somewhere. And the Rolls come along, and from then on, till they got to Chequers, the Rolls tied the armoured car on the back and towed it to Chequers. And I believe I read that afterwards, the lieutenant who was in charge of that told them that story, and it was recorded in a Reader's Digest book after the war, he told them. But they told us that, didn't they, the Coast Rangers, his armoured car broke down, but he wouldn't get in it. Yeah.
Which battalion of the Middlesex were you with at that time?
The 70th, Young Soldiers Battalion. I think there was several battalions of Young Soldiers Battalions, weren't there? And they were nearly all graded men that were running it, the RSM and the CO and that. But he looked after us. Well fed we were.
And then what?
Pardon?
Then what happened?
And then along came Henry Brown, who used to recruit the commandos, and they weren't very happy about it, because they were training men to reinforce their battalions, and suddenly, but out of 44 that I was interviewed for, only four of us got through the medical. And the others were told to come back. They were all undernourished. And they were only 17-year-olds, and they were told to come back next year. So I don't know what happened, because after I left, the battalion broke up. And most of them went to Ox and Bucks and went as airborne, which we never knew about. Whereas the army commandos used to advertise themselves and come round and get men to join, the airborne was always very secret, because we weren't supposed to know what we'd got in that line, especially the glider troops, because they used to advertise for pilots for the gliders, but not the troops or where they were coming from.
So you mean Henry Brown just came round to the unit?
He used to come round with an officer, and he'd lecture anybody that was interested, and then we'd have a medical, nothing else. We didn't have to have a brain. Just have to be fit. And that's what we did.
Were you happy to join the commandos?
I think so, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because it could get a bit, you know, stale there after a while. You know, you heard stories about, and everybody wanted to go and do their bit, didn't they? So that was the point. The younger you were, the more you wanted to go.
What happened next?
So I went, and we went up to Achnacarry. There was about three of us from the battalion, and we went up by train and went to Glasgow and across to Edinburgh on a train, and then from there we had a night in the YMCA, and then we went up in the morning on the mountain train to Achnacarry, to Fort William or Speenbridge. And when I went in the gate, I met a chap that came from Emlyn Road Radio, almost next door to me. Where I'd gone to school with him, and I hadn't seen him since he was, when I was about 11 year old, when I left Radio, and he walked in the gate with me. Oh, well, here he is. And well, just as if we'd seen each other the day before.
Were you able to cope with the training?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did it. They had quite a program, you know. They used to start off with a short jog trot round the camp and gradually lengthen it. About every third day we'd have another speed march until we'd done 15 miles. And that was to Speenbridge and back, 7.5 miles each way. And we used to... The only way we did it was to run and walk. We used to run 2 telegraph poles and walk 1 telegraph pole, all the way to Speenbridge and all the way back. You had to be back in, I think the bit longest one, had to be back in 2 hours 10 minutes, something like that. And you could do it then, after you'd done all them others in between, over a period of about 4 or 5 weeks. You did it easy, quite easy. Well, I don't say easy, but it came natural. But if you'd have tried the 50-mile, you would never have done it in the beginning. And they used to meet you at the top of the hill at Achnacarry, and the piper, you'd fall in threes because you mustn't come back on your own. Got to come back as a troop. And you weren't allowed to approach the camp until the last man was back. So if you had a boat like me, sometimes I couldn't do it. There's others the same, and you get hold of them and you put one on each side and bring them along so that you all got in together, and your time was taken when you reached that hill and the last man was there, and then you'd march down the hill and in the gate. It was fascinating, the gate, because you had all the graves inside the gate and with things, messages on them. This man never removed the base plate from his grenade and all that sort of thing. And there's his grave there. All the mistakes that he'd made. And they fed you well. Lovely food. I think it was the best food in the army at Achnacarry. And I had a fight. You know, they used to see if you could box and that. And some lad, McGregor, a Scottish lad, fought Mac, give me a 3-round fight, and I'd never boxed in my life up until then, but he turned out he was a professional. He'd fought an Irish man named Spider, somebody or other, and Spider Kelly, I think it was, and he had been a European champion then. But this, you didn't find that out till afterwards. And it was quite good, because we had milling. Used to have milling contests. You'd start off with the lightest, and the two would go in for a minute, blow the whistle, and the first two go in, blow the whistle, and they're supposed to come out the next two, till you got up to the heavyweights. and it got a bit out of hand in the middle because some of men got time to get out before two others got in. And I remember we went to one place in Scotland where they were having games, island games, and this Scottish man couldn't understand it. He said, "It's not boxing. It's not boxing." But it was quite good. And we were allowed out once a week after lunch and back on to Fort William, where there was one cinema with bench seats and a cushion on it for you to sit on. And that's all there was. It was a chippy. You could go and get chips and that. And you're back on the bus at 10:30. You had to be back on the bus at 10:30 because you'd never walk back that time of night. Couple of pints of beer inside of you. It's quite good. Weren't allowed to smoke till midday. If you smoked, you weren't allowed to touch a cigarette until after lunch. They may specify that. If anybody was caught smoking before lunch, that was bad. Yeah. We had abseiling down the rock face. No equipment, no cleats or anything. Just put it between your legs and over your other shoulder and slide down like that all the way down the rock face. Nearly 100 feet, I think it was. Still there, to my knowledge. And across the river, the death slide, they called it. And then while we were there, the American Rangers came in. Of course, they had been with Number 6 in North Africa. The American Rangers, in fact, I picked up that little model of a commando at the weekend. They're selling it in the news agents now. And it's behind there, Joe. And the chap said to me the other night, we had a meeting about 10 days ago. He said, what's Number 6 doing in American uniforms? I said, well, they landed in Tunisia with the Americans, and all the Americans were stretcher bearers, medics. And they'd had set twos in the past with the Vichy France, who didn't like us much at the time because we sunk the fleet, hadn't we? And so they put American tunics on our boys and American spats. And there's a picture of them there in Tunisia in their book that came with that little model. And that was the reason. And they had a terrible time in North Africa, apparently. I wasn't there, but they landed at Bourne Aerodrome, and they went across the Goblet Plain, and lived for 3 months in a railway tunnel. On this way, they took this train. I suppose it was coal burning, this train. Took it across this plain and was strafed by two Messerschmitts on the way. And the chaps had terrible wounds and that. I think that's what bonded the American Rangers with them, because they were all medics and they saved a lot of lives. There's that 6th Commando soldier.
What happened to you next?
Pardon?
What happened to you next?
Oh, yeah, well, joined when they come back. When they come back from North Africa, my intake from Fort William, from Achnacarry, was the first to join them in Hove. And that's where we trained with them for... And what date was that, Joe? I don't know when it was.
Well,
to your place, because I was billeted with Joe's mum and dad.
Is this in Hove?
In Hove, yeah. Mm.
How did you get on with the billeting?
With
the billeting?
Oh, right. Didn't I? Mrs. Who was Nick? Arundel next door. She had three, didn't she? And what's the name of the next one, lady along? Windella. She married one of our lads. His brother was a jockey a well-known jockey in Manchester. What was his name? Smart. And Frank. Are you? Yeah, Frank Smart. And his brother was a jockey in Manchester. And his mother used to send the tips down. And they'd all put their name on the horse. If it came in, which it very often did, they'd all go... Sorry? They'd all go in the Eclipse, which was a little pub along the road, and spend all this money they'd won. And we had a... In our troop, we had almost a football team. We had professionals from Wales and Scotland, and they were all in our troop.
Which troop are you in?
We were in three troop.
Of six command.
Six command. It was a salt troop. We had some smashing football matches wherever we went.
What happened next?
Well, we went twice. We started off twice from Normandy. About a fortnight before, we started off down to Southampton. And the weather was so bad, they sent us back home again. Next thing, we was at the knocking the door again. And then tried it on the 6th, you know. Well, about the 1st of June, it was the second time we went down there, and finished up on Southampton Common. And the Americans were looking after us, and they fed us. The weather was appalling, absolutely terrible it was. And then it cleared a little, and we sailed from Warsash eventually. We got down there on the 4th of June, the night before, to Warsash, and got on the boats at 5 o'clock at night, and started off straight across. And only on that one night, and we landed in the morning.
What was the crossing like for you?
Very good. Yeah, it wasn't a bad crossing at all. There it is, there's the boat.
That was yours.
And that one, yeah. And Andy, you met him at Norwich. And he says, you see that wake in front of your boat? That was two troop. He said it was his troop. But actually, it wasn't. It was an American Coast Guard. And they came to our... just at dawn, they came alongside. American Coast Guard cutter. You know, they're always the same shape. And it wasn't camouflaged at all. It was silvery grey. And I don't know who got on the boat, but it could have been Lovett. I don't know. But our CO was on our boat, Mills Roberts. And in the morning, when we started inland towards the coast to land, the 9th Hussars, I think 9th 14 Hussars, took the beach with a battalion of Lancashire Regiment. I don't know, I think they were South Lancs, I think they were. I don't know, I'm not sure that the number, but they were a Lancashire Regiment. Montgomery in this park told us that as we were pretty well untried, he was going to put a well-tried regiment to take the beach. And that's what it was. And I think it finished them. I don't think they ever formed up again. And there were 6 and 3 and 4 and 10A towards Weston, towards the east. And we were on the right flank of the landing.
Can you describe your landing, what you actually did when you landed on the beach?
We just made our way straight across the sand to the dunes, to a pillbox on the seafront.
When you disembarked, were you in much water?
No. I could show you a picture of them coming ashore. And
so you had a dry landing?
No, up to our waist. But some of them had a lot. We carried a rucksack with about 65 pounds in. But a lot of them had heavy weapons. I mean, they carried the base plate of the Vickers. And a chap said, he grabbed two Maywests, them ones you pump up, and strapped them one each side of the base plate and floated it in. He said, I couldn't have waded in with it on my back. So he's just tied these Maywests one each side, and he said, I dropped it in the water and it floated, so I pushed it all the way to the beach. And then there was the 3-inch mortar. The base plate of that was heavy, because they turned it into aluminium later on, but it was still the first early ones. And our troop, number 3 troop, were sent in the front as we went inland.
Were you under much fire on the beach?
No. Well, there was fire on the beach. It was wounded, a lot of wounded, but you didn't stand still. You just crossed it and got off it as quick as you can. They kept on...